You can't fix me. I'm unbreakable.
Hey, you're listening to TVI on Marvel, a Marvel TV podcast, and we are your heroes for hire. My name is Mike. With me today is Nate Bliss.
Hello.
And Martin Thomas.
Hi there.
Okay, so today we're diving into the premiere of Marvel's Luke Cage on Netflix. But first, let's take a sec to talk about what we're doing with this podcast now over the next several episodes, because we're kind of transitioning. Some of you listening may have been listeners of the TVI podcast, which Nate and I did for about a year. It was sort of our first plunge into podcasting. And as you probably noticed, we've rebranded. We're TVI on Marvel now. Like Steve Rogers sipping on that super serum, you know?
Did he sip on it?
He sipped on it.
I always thought it was more injected into it. Or even, so though it's a giant test tube, I never got the impression that he sipped it.
Just kind of casually.
Like a fine mint tea.
Yeah,
like,
Just, you know, on a bad day when he's feeling kind of tired, he's like, I'm going to get some of that super serum, man. And he's hiding in the bathroom, sipping on that canister.
Right.
Yeah. Agent Carter heating it up like a pot of tea.
Dr. Erskine, you make the best.
All right. So, yeah, like Steve, we are a stronger, taller, chestier version of what we once were. All right, that weak-ass analogy aside, we are now TVI on Marvel.
Yes.
And we'll be covering the Marvel Netflix TV shows exclusively, starting with an in-depth episode review of all 13 episodes of Marvel's Luke Cage.
Yes.
Which premiered September 30th. Now, we're not going to fanboy out too much. Not too much. Martin's a critic. I'm a critic. You're Nate.
I'm just a geek.
You're a guy.
just a over exuberant nerdy guy.
But you know, we are going to celebrate the shows
because
we do like them. But you know, if there's stuff we don't like, just like I do on Mr. Roboto, we're going to talk about that too.
Did you catch flack when you mentioned the stuff you don't like?
Sometimes. Oh. Not a lot, but it's fine.
Oh, uh-oh. Oh, this is going to be a... Okay, go ahead.
Oh, a good teaser.
Yeah.
I like this premiere a lot, and I think it's a great piece of auteur television. But before we get into it further, let's introduce ourselves a little further.
All right.
Just to let the listeners know who's talking here. So, Martin, what the hell are you doing here?
Oh, well, I'm here because you invited me. But I assume you invited me because, yes, I've been podcasting for quite a while. At least podcasting probably like the last 10 years. And before that, part of a movie review show that that ran for 10 years on Access TV. So it's been just about 20 years for me talking about pop culture and media.
Yeah, you rolled in on your wheelchair tonight. And it was good.
Pretty much. Worked in the comic industry. Been reading comics since I was 6 years old. I'm not going to tell you how long that is, but it's been a long time, let me tell you. And I figure, hey, if anybody's going to come here and talk about this thing, why not me?
Nate, same question.
Well, I've been podcasting for a little while, but like as listeners, people who have come from TVI probably know I was definitely the gushy one, whereas Mike was the more like, well, let's talk about how the episode is structured.
I was the boring one. You're the fun one. All right. Now there's two fun ones, and I'm still the boring one.
But I've also been reading comics since I was like in short pants.
Yeah.
And
since you were sipping on that super serum as a kid.
Yeah. Well, we had like, you know.
It's done wonders for your chest.
But most of all, I'm just incredibly, I mean, I love the Marvel movies, but the Netflix shows for me have been so good. They've been my favorite Marvel televised, filmed, or otherwise products.
Right on.
Products.
Products?
Products.
Things?
Products?
Yeah.
I guess they're items that are
pieces
available.
Of storytelling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. These are better than all of their other TV thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, there was Agent Carter, which wasn't bad, but these are better.
Yeah, that's true.
These are better. Okay, so me, I'm a recovering TV critic. I've written for Birth, Movies, Death, AOL TV, Huffington Post, Movie Phone, other sites that I don't want to mention because they're terrible. several newspapers. I co-host a Mr. Roboto podcast, like you guys know. I absolutely love TV, which I think is obvious. I'm interested in covering shows that really matter. Okay, like Mr. Robot. And I think Luke Cage, like Mr. Robot, is poised to be maybe one of those essential shows of this current wave of progressive television, this socially aware TV we're getting, especially with this TV season. I mean, we have Atlanta.
Yeah.
Holy cow, yeah.
Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Luke Cage. I heard Queen Sugar's up there, too. Haven't seen it yet. But I can't wait to dig into Luke Cage's. Oh, and I love me some Marvel comics and the Marvel movies. So I think everyone in the world backs me up on that one. Okay. So Luke Cage, season one, episode one, Moment of Truth, named after one of my favorite Gangstar songs.
Yeah.
So this episode was a strong, slow jam, if there ever was one. And I can't wait to see what the show plays next. That's my one sentence takeaway.
Okay.
Martin. Quick takeaway from the first episode.
Quick takeaway, naming the episodes after Gangstar titles. Hey, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The music's great. I love having a cameo from Rafael Siddiq.
Hell yeah.
Singing on stage.
Tony has done it again.
right. Mike Coulter is he's great. He has a lot of charisma. So he captures my attention the whole time he's on. Everything else about the show I don't like at all.
Wow.
I think I know where you're going. Nate, first give me your one sentence review, your first take.
Well,
on the pilot. I know you've watched more.
Yeah.
And I have Martin, a couple you've episodes. Watched you've watched I've, like three
I've watched
or four.
The first three.
Okay, I've only watched the first one. So we're just talking about the pilot.
Right.
When you're watching this pilot, were you like, bam, I'm in, or what'd you feel?
As I was watching it, because there have been Daredevil and Jessica Jones so far, I've been kind of thinking, all right, here's a new creative team. Obviously a new cast, there are a couple of returning characters and stuff. But I was struck that like Daredevil and Jessica Jones kind of from the get-go were like tense and automatically it was high octane right from the start. And once I realized, okay, they're going for a slower start. Like with Daredevil, you know, Matt Murdock was already very poised. He's already running out at night and beating people up. Jessica Jones is already
a private eye,
and she's very invested in these cases that come up.
She's into some shit, but Luke is hanging back.
Luke is very much hanging back. Especially after what happened to him and Jessica Jones, where it's like he stuck his neck out, and then he gets led around by mind controlling Doctor Who, Luke lost bad in Jessica Jones. Yeah, I mean, he was so coming right off of that. I mean. He does not want to stick his head out. But as far as like my quick takeaway, before I go on too much of a tangent and stuff, it was just kind of adjusting to, all right, it's going to be a slower start and it's not going to be a sprint from the first episode.
I like Mike Coulter in the show because he delivers his lines well. He has just a natural charisma about him. Just he's good looking. He looks like he means what he says.
Right.
Mm-hmm. While he plays this well, I was going back and reading a bunch of Luke Cage comics. And the thing about Luke Cage was that he was always a larger than life character, not just physically, but the way he talked. Right. Luke Cage always talked a lot of shit.
He did.
Yeah.
He's constantly running his mouth.
Yeah.
He could back it up.
Mm-hmm.
And at first he was kind of like a blaxploitation sort of cartoon. Mm-hmm. And then in later incarnations, they pulled back, but he never was somebody who didn't run his mouth constantly, where he was in everybody's face. And just going back and reading those comics and thinking about this first episode, I'm like, man, it's really missing that. It's missing that thing that makes him actually Luke Cage. I mean, he's cool. Mm-hmm. They're going a different direction, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But I'm just acknowledging that it's still not really Luke Cage.
But it is the beginning of Luke Cage show, so maybe we'll get there. We still haven't gotten the origin. We still haven't gotten the, you know, he's... At the end of this episode, we do see him jump into the action, right? And we do see him talk a little shit,
right?
You know,
yeah,
right.
But he's not, you know, he's not black exploitation from the 70s Luke Cage.
No,
but he's more in line because my Luke Cage, I read recently about three of those original Luke Cage comics from the 70s, the first ones, right? And I liked them; they're good. But the Luke Cage that I really like is the new Avengers Luke Cage.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a
early
great
2000s. Mm-hmm. Or the Jessica Jones, the alias Luke Cage, right. Mm-hmm. Which right. I think Coulter is kind of playing a little bit.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah. He's a lot more like he was in the alias comic. The funny thing is, Luke Cage, he'd been that blaxploitation character, and then they brought him back where he had kind of a red shirt, but he still had the bands, and he was a bit more serious.
In the 90s. Still,
in the 90s. And it wasn't until there was that miniseries Cage, where Richard Corbin, like the last person I thought would draw a Luke Cage story, drew him, and he had more of the look he has in the Avengers, where he wore the knit hat and just regular street clothes.
Bald head.
Bald head, regular street clothes. And then he just kind of disappeared until he popped up in Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
And after that, boom, it's almost like he is the new Avengers.
Right.
They always make sure he's in there. And Brian Michael Bendis writes him to great effect.
Yes, he does. Mm-hmm.
And there's just some of that I wish was in the show.
Just some of the sass?
The sass.
Gotcha.
That's exactly what I'm looking for.
Okay.
The sass.
Yeah. Sassy.
Yeah. I want him to open up some. Let us because Daredevil hit the ground running and he's in a fight like right off the bat. With Jessica Jones, even though the Kilgrave stuff came in a few episodes in, we're introduced to her and she's a train wreck.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's so rare that you're asked to follow such a damaged character.
Yeah.
I mean, she's an anti-hero to herself.
That's true.
And you're just like.
That was incredibly compelling from the start.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I'm just finding with Luke Cage so far, it's as much as it's the culture, it's also the culture of a lot of cliches from black movies. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of the barbershops you guys. Uh-huh. Episodes of the barbershop movies you've watched, and Soul Food and Tyler Perry this and that. I've seen a lot, and I'm just seeing too many of the cliches pop up here, and I keep hoping one will get turned on its ear, but it's sort of not.
Yeah, there's lots of tropes going on here,
yeah,
especially in this first episode, because as good as Mike Coulter is, as good as Alfre Woodard is, as good as a lot of these characters or actors are, the story, largely in a broad sense, relies on kind of old, boring tropes.
Mm-hmm.
You have the reluctant hero,
right.
The troubled neighborhood, the rising gangster with a messiah complex, right? Working his political connections, a corrupt politician, the beat cops working the case, mm-hmm. right? These are tropes we've seen a million times before.
The old father figure.
There you go.
Who know is destined to die.
He's going
to
die, yeah. But for me, what makes a show come alive, despite these tropes that I've seen before, and I hate tropes. I want something original, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me, I still like the show because despite these tropes, what makes the show come alive for me is the amazing texture and the specificity of it all. Like the gangsters meet up with a corrupt official at Cottonmouth's Club. It's intercut with that great Rafael Sadiq performance.
Yeah.
You're not going to see that on network TV, right? The gun deal gone horribly wrong. It's also intercut with one of those performances.
That's right.
The barbershop scene that opens up the episode, it doesn't hold our hand, doesn't guide us gently into this new world. It just drops us right in with these characters, talking these deep sports references and stuff. And
which I still, just as a geek, I still don't understand.
I don't
like they said Kobe at one point. It's like, I know who Kobe Bryant is.
I know who Phil Jackson is. But the show just dives right into the specific personalities that make this place come alive. And I really like that. Like the giant Biggie picture in Cottonmouth's office. Sure, it's kind of ridiculous, but it kind of tells you what that guy's all about a little bit, you know? And also, it's this beautiful, like, visual. Like, all the scenes in Cottonmouth's office and those violent scenes reminded me a lot about a lot of Spike Lee movies, you know?
Oh,
yeah.
Sure.
And I think all that stuff, those are marks of an auteur. And judging by this pilot, I think they got the right guy to run this show. Chao Coker, he wrote the Biggie Smalls biopic, mm-hmm. Notorious. He wrote a number of episodes of that show Southland on TNT.
And The Wire, I think.
Was he? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah,
cool.
Some episodes of The Wire.
If the show is still relying on those tropes in this first episode, and you guys have seen more, so you're kind of looking at me like it maybe continues to do that, which kind of sucks, but we'll see.
It does feel like every time a trope happens, there should be like a little ding, a little ticker.
If you made it a drinking game, you'd pass out before the show was over. Right.
I don't think it would be that. I don't think it's that bad, but it does seem as if like there are quite a few. But for me, I'm a sucker for when a show or a movie really takes its time to show a neighborhood or a sense of place, you know?
Sure.
I won't say it's as good as this show, but it made me think of Tremé.
Okay.
Tremé is a great show.
Yeah.
But, and I'm not saying Luke Cage is as good as Tremé, but with the music and with this neighborhood and all these very, like, just a wider, and it just, more characters get introduced.
I love.
In subsequent episodes.
I love the setting. I love the specificity of the setting. I love that the show is taking time to world build.
Yeah.
And world build based on a world or a culture that is real in 2016.
Yeah.
Sure, it's this heightened version of Harlem. I've never been to Harlem, but I don't imagine everything is bathed in this beautiful golden light.
Right.
You know, like the show is, you know. But the show and Cheo Coker is, I think, doing a great job in expanding and deepening the MCU because, you know, I never thought we would see a deep story rooted in the political and criminal structures of Harlem based in the MCU. I think that's great.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean this is a great show. It means that's a good effort.
I give you that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think what's happening, from my perspective, the show in this first episode is trying to do two things, and maybe it's going to be a problem going forward. It's trying to world build, almost like Tremé, almost like The Wire. But it's also trying to tell a specific story about one dude.
Yeah.
True.
The reluctant hero finding his power. Now, it seems like Cheo Coker is really in love with creating this Harlem, which is amazing, and which leads to some really nice sequences. But then it seemed to me Luke Cage himself was a bit of an afterthought.
It was almost like we were just kind of just a fly on his shoulder.
On his shoulder.
There you go.
Kind of like watching. Like earlier in the episode where he meets Misty, we haven't talked about Misty yet. Right. I really like Misty. But
me too.
Did that get revealed in the first episode?
What?
Misty.
Oh, good point. Thank you for thank you for looking out for that. Yeah, you're right.
We know she's Misty Knight.
Okay, all right.
I'm looking at IMDb right now, and it says she's Misty Knight.
Well, okay. But you're talking about, because that didn't get revealed to the second episode.
You're right. Thank you.
Right here, Simone Missick as Misty Knight.
Okay.
13 episodes.
All right.
It's all good.
Oh, but you're looking at IMDb. That's cheating.
Well, I'm glad you brought her up, man, because my favorite sequence in this whole pilot was Luke flirting with Misty Knight, Luke going to bed with Misty Knight.
Yeah.
Luke waking up the next day. Are they going to hook up again? Who knows? You know, she's taking charge. Mm-hmm. I think they have a lot of chemistry. I really do.
Well, it's an interesting thing because I'm watching it. I didn't check IMDb first. And I just like the idea that, hey, he picked up this chick in the bar.
Gotcha. Right.
Who he's working as a dishwasher.
Yeah.
And
he's
a bartender.
Not bartender all the time.
Right,
he's
right.
Just covering that night.
But he still picks her up and, you know, they go back to her place and they do it. And he goes on about his business. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And then she's a cop. I'm not even thinking Misty Knight because Misty was, maybe she was at some point, but in comics, she's always been a private detective.
Yeah.
And her big signature is what?
The arm.
No.
No?
No.
The afro.
The afro.
The afro. Yeah.
The afro. Yeah. And even if you say like, well, they're updating it because that was the 70s, but I'm like, no. Black women are back to wearing afros now. Yeah. It's actually really chic.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, why would you not have that in here? It's frustrating.
Okay, so
part of me wonders if the NYPD has a rule against afros or something. You know? Because the military has like incredibly stringent hair.
Right.
But I'm wondering.
It's the cops, man. They're not the.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And she's a detective. She can wear what
she wants. She can do whatever
she
wants.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Once you become detective, you can just do whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, Martin, I think earlier I cut you off, man, because you were wanting to dive into some more of the problems you had with the premiere. So.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm not going to...
Talk some shit, Martin.
I don't want to beat over the same problems. Okay, something you talked about was how much you love the intercutting of the performance on stage with the violence going on.
I like
that.
But you probably don't watch Empire, do you?
I watched the first season. I dropped off second season.
I know.
They do that.
Man, wasn't that...
I don't know.
Didn't they end that first season so horribly?
Yeah.
Like, the first season was... I was like, I wasn't going to watch it, and I did. And we got to where we would all gather on a TV and enjoy it. And it got to that last episode, and man, did it ever shit the bed.
Yep.
Oh,
like,
really?
It was like a seventh episode season, where all the characters are doing things that they would never do.
Oh. Yes.
And I was just like, all right.
Yeah.
I'm done.
I know that show has, a lot of my friends watch that show and they basically say, it's so crazy. It's bonkers.
It's a black telenovela.
Okay.
Totally.
So it goes as far as a telenovela would.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. It's like Falcon Crest, but crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. It's just like, what can we do to make the audience go, whoa?
Yep. Okay.
But we got to make them tweet.
Right. But from the time that Empire was good, I see a lot of those things happening in Luke Cage. Mm. Like I said, Mike, you're so hopeful that it makes me want to go, all right. Just hang in there. I'm a little worried. I mean, a part of it was I felt I was kind of set up just because the early reviews it came in talking about how good it was, how it was probably the best of the Marvel shows.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I was trying not to have those expectations.
They were high.
Yes, but they were high.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I'm going to have to come down quite a bit. I'm only 3 in, and I thought, well, maybe it picks up. But I keep reading things with different things from people now. Now the reviews are starting to be mixed. And there's people who say like, oh, it's really great up until the 7th episode. And I'm like, okay. But just speaking on what I've seen so far and trying to like back my memory up just to the first episode, I recognize the things in there that are good. They don't seduce me as much as everybody else. So I'm still like, I still just think story structure and dialogue. Those are always like the two things I'm looking for. And pacing. I feel like I don't mind something being deliberate or even being slow. I don't have an ADD sense of pace with things.
I'm with you on that.
But I feel like in moving slow, it's okay to not have anything happen as long as what's happening is the things your characters are saying back and forth to each other. Mm-hmm. And a lot in the way it's being filmed, almost never do I see a scene where the camera's there, except for the barbershop scene. Mm-hmm. After that, there's hardly a scene where the camera's in one place and characters talk back and forth to each other.